From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Tonight, there's a new wrinkle in the race for governor. A third-party candidate is shaking things up.
Senator Sam McCann was a Republican until today. He resigned from the caucus so he could run for governor.
Get ready, Governor. Bring it on. I look forward to debating you, and I look forward to talking about your failed governorship, the failure that you brought to Illinois. The state is worse off than when you took office 3.5 years ago, but I'm prepared to fix your mistakes.
Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle is making history today. She's just been named the first female and first African-American chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party.
Democratic candidates need to have the tools and training to ensure that they can run modern, effective, and inclusive campaigns.
Our first case for this morning is United States against Aaron Schock.
The government would have this court be the first in the nation to hold that a member of Congress can be sent prison based on ambiguous or debatable interpretations of House rules.
The U.S. Supreme Court turned down former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich's appeal, and now he's basically guaranteed to be behind bars until 2024 unless the president pardons him, and the two happen to know each other. Blagojevich appeared on the president's former reality show, The Apprentice.
You know, my husband is probably the only person in the entire history of the United States who is serving any kind of sentence for simply asking for campaign contributions.
Well, Rod Blagojevich still in prison. You heard his wife, former First Lady Patty Blagojevich, there. Blagojevich's hopes of being released early taking another blow this week. Also, there's another hat in the ring for governor, the longtime Republican State Senator Sam McCann from Macoupin County. He says he'll run on what's being called the Conservative Party ticket, and we'll talk about what that means for the race overall. It's all coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. In studio with me, Charlie Wheeler. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Daisy Contreras, IPR reporter, and joining us as well, Brian Mackey, IPR State House reporter. And joining us from our State House Bureau today, Monique Garcia with the Chicago Tribune. And Monique, thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you for having me.
Daisy, I'll start with you. Sam McCann, he's decided he's going to make a bid for governor, not as a Republican. He's been a critic of Governor Bruce Rauner. So what's this all about? What is he going to try to do here?
Well, he's going to try, according to McCann, he's going to try to fix Rauner's mistakes if he gets elected. And, you know, this is interesting because Rauner already has a difficult road ahead of him to try to bring together the ultra-conservative voters who voted for Jeannie Ives. What McCann is trying to do is he's trying to appeal to these voters, Ives' base, to come over and vote for him. These are votes that Rauner desperately needs to win the elections in November.
Monique, we know Sam McCann here, those that cover the legislature, and here in central Illinois because he covers even a part of Springfield. With that state senate district, but is he really well known enough outside of that area? Is he a serious challenger in any way?
Well, I think the concern for the Rauner camp is they view him as a spoiler. Senator McCann has gained some name recognition in the past couple years because he's famously fought with the governor on several labor issues. He's sided with unions in areas where the governor has tried to push back against some of their control. And indeed, Senator McCann is backed by a union in this effort. They gave him quite a bit of money to launch this bid for governor. And so for Rauner, the concern is, you know, he needs every Republican vote he can get, and this can really siphon off some of those supporters.
Yeah, to that point, I think it's telling that McCann is not launching a independent bid for governor. He's launching a third party bid, and that party's name is the Conservative Party, right? Governor Rauner, as Daisy pointed out, just lost or narrowly avoided losing the primary against a more conservative Republican challenger and State Representative Jeannie Ives. And now here's somebody who's going to be running in the Conservative Party. I mean, he might as well have just, you know, called the party the Not Rauner Party or something like that for what the you know, apparent aim of this effort is.
Charlie, right, and when he launched his bid, Senator McCann called Governor Rauner a rhino, a Republican in name only, and he points to these issues that Jeannie Ives really seized on in her campaign. That is the governor's signing of a bill to expand access or expand taxpayer funding of abortions, and also him signing legislation that expanded protections for immigrants who are in the state illegally.
Well, he did resign from the Republican caucus, not as a state senator. He is not going to run again as a state senator, so he's in his final months in office there. But, Charlie, do you remember anything like this happening before where somebody took on the sitting governor of their own party and took such drastic action here as to try to make a bid like this?
Well, I can't recall anyone who was elected as a member of a particular party then launching a third-party bid. But if you look back, when was it? Was it 2006 when the Reverend James Meeks, who was a Democratic state senator, talked about running as an independent against Rod Blagojevich, and that never came to pass. And Meeks's issue was funding for elementary and secondary education, particularly schools that had a lot of kids who were low-income, kids of color. And Blagojevich, in essence, promised that he would increase education funding by something like $6 billion over the next several years. And Meeks was satisfied with that, and he never really did. He never did go through, and he wasn't on the ballot as an independent. I can't remember somebody running, though, who started out as a Democrat or a Republican, and then sort of midstream decided that they would run as a third-party candidate. The Green Party had a candidate for governor against Blagojevich, got more than 10% of the vote, which established the Green Party as a, I don't know what the right word would be, I guess an established political party. Yeah. Which meant the next time around, they had to get just a fraction of the number of signatures that McCann will have to get. McCann, if I'm not mistaken, will have to get 25,000 valid signatures on the petition. And I also believe the rules are that if someone voted in the primary, as I did, that person is not eligible to sign a petition for a third-party candidate until the next election season rolls around.
So, Brian, is this really, you know, is this even worth the time? It seems to me that Democrats are not going to necessarily vote for Sam McCann. They weren't going to vote for Rauner either. But they know that they're going to want J.B. Pritzker for governor, so they're going to vote for him. I would think labor groups would probably back Pritzker. Who's he really talking to here? Is it the Jeannie Ives voter, or are they even going to be willing to go along with him?
Well, I guess that depends. Who knows what's in the minds of the voters? But I think that who he's targeting, yes, is clearly that Jeannie Ives voter. As Monique, I think it was pointed out, Local 150, which is the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, they gave a $50,000 contribution to McCann the same week that he made this announcement. And they are a party that has done some of this, unconventional political strategies in the past. I mean, they encouraged, their Democrats to support Kirk Dillard against Bruce Rauner in the Republican primary 4 years ago. So this is not the first time that they have, taken, non-straightforward means of attempting to influence an election outcome. And I think that particularly labor unions are so unhappy with Governor Rauner and his policy agenda that they don't want to leave any, opportunity to, on the table, right? Who knows what might come out about the Democratic candidate. We've already had the Blagojevich tapes that Monique's newspaper, the Chicago Tribune, has reported on. Who knows what else might come out about him. And so, anything they can do to try and improve his chances and, in order to do that by diminishing Governor Rauner's chances, I think they're going to try and seize that opportunity.
Well, the Rauner campaign said Sam McCann called him the worst kind of political opportunist. So the former GOP chair, Pat Brady, had some negative things to say. He also said this is labor. This is not Sam McCann running as on a conservative platform. This is labor backing him. Daisy, what were some other, were we hearing a lot from other people at the Capitol about this? Was there a lot of discussion on it?
Well, some people are saying that McCann is this candidate who has debt, in history of debt. And when asked about this, McCann answered that this actually makes him a more relatable candidate as opposed to Pritzker or Rauner, who probably don't really have to worry about issues like that.
Yet it occurs to me, too, that we're all thinking about the people who supported Jeannie Ives because they thought that Bruce Rauner was basically a social liberal and they are socially conservative. But thinking about it, there are a lot of Democrats, particularly in southern Illinois and in some of the western areas of Illinois, who are equally socially conservative. And so if they have a choice between, assuming McCann makes the ballot, if they have a choice between a Democratic candidate who is very much pro-choice and a Republican candidate who is very much pro-choice and a conservative party candidate who is very much pro-life, they may be tempted to vote for the pro-life guy.
And, of course, the big issue still, as you mentioned, he's got to get on the ballot. We'll see how that goes going forward. Well, a former governor, Rod Blagojevich, getting some bad news once again, an effort to try to get him out of prison early, still in federal prison for corruption. He apparently, the U.S. Supreme Court basically saying that they weren't going to take up his case. Monique, what does that leave as his options at this point?
Well, it means for the former governor that he will basically remain in prison until 2024 unless he gets a pardon or a commutation from the President of the United States. And it was pretty notable that after the Supreme Court this week decided not to hear this appeal, that Patty Blagojevich took to the airwaves. Specifically, she appeared on Fox News, which is known to be watched by President Trump, and she pretty much made her case directly to him in the hope that he would hear it and take action. And the Blagojeviches do have a relationship with President Trump. You'll remember that the former governor appeared on, I think it was Celebrity Apprentice, where he famously could not work a laptop and couldn't type. So they've met before. They do have a history. And so she's really kind of making this last-minute appeal directly to the president.
Yeah, and I thought it was notable, Monique, that on that appearance, she made certain to mention the connection of Patrick Fitzgerald, who had prosecuted, or his office had prosecuted, Rod Blagojevich, and he was also the special prosecutor in the case of Scooter Libby, who the president recently pardoned. So just really trying to draw that explicit comparison. And I mean, there was no mincing words about it. You know, Tucker Carlson, the Fox News host that I saw her talking to, said, you know, if you had a message for the president, what would it be? And, you know, I'm just struck by the fact that, you know, maybe a couple generations ago, you'd want to get with the president's, you know, Tommy the Cork, or, you know, even in the Obama administration, maybe you'd want to cultivate a relationship with Valerie Jarrett or someone like that. Now you just have to get on Fox News if you want to try and get the president's attention.
Well, and I think it's important the way that she's making this appeal is about, you know, Rod Blagojevich has gotten a bad rap that he hasn't done anything that other people didn't do when taping campaign contributions. And this is an idea that I think could really appeal to the president, who feels that he's been unfairly judged as part of this massive political system that surrounds him. And so the president complains about, you know, how he views himself as a victim in this kind of political system that he's been elected into. And that kind of ideal might appeal to somebody like Donald Trump as he considers Rod Blagojevich's case.
I think there were a lot of people, at least, who felt as though Rod Blagojevich needed to be punished. He had to go to prison. Charlie, some type of pardon of him now, that's not as radioactive maybe as it once was, though. He has served quite a bit of time, and maybe there are some people out there who might be feeling a little more like, hey, his kids are, you know, would like to see him, and his wife, and, you know, that he's done enough time. I mean, is that a fair statement, that maybe something could be done?
I suspect there might be people out there who would think that way. But it also occurs to me that President Trump tends to be someone, from my observation, who makes sort of spur-of-the-moment judgments without carefully weighing all the possible pluses and minuses. And so he could very well, as Monique was saying, say, here's Rod Blagojevich. He was pilloried by the press. he had this overzealous prosecutor who put him in jail for doing stuff that everyday politicians do all the time, campaigning. And so I'm going to pardon him. And it's also what you say, it could be a prelude to other people I may pardon down the line when the special counsel is finished.
Well, even speaking of the Blagojevich administration, going back to that period of time, it's been a while now. However, the name still gets in the news quite a bit. And Kwame Raoul, who's running for attorney general. Monique, you wrote a story about somebody who's working with him. There's some questions and maybe some controversy surrounding that. Fill us in.
Right. So we got some new campaign reports this week, and I'll have to give credit to our Springfield intern, Bill Lukic, who was going through these reports and noticed a name that popped up in Kwame Raoul's campaign disclosure, that he paid about $13,000 to a man named Bamani Obadele. And this man did kind of groundwork, field work for the campaign. He put out signs that you see in people's yards. He went door to door, appealing to people, asking people to vote for Kwame Raoul. But Mr. Obadele had pled guilty previously when he was working for Rod Blagojevich in the Department of Children and Family Services for directing contracts to companies that he owned. And so it raised some questions. There had been questions during the campaign for the Attorney General's office about how much work this office should do as the state's chief legal officer in rooting out public corruption. And this is a person who acknowledged, he pled guilty that he did this. But he said, you know, I did my time and I shouldn't be barred from participating in the political system. And Kwame Raoul said, I agree, and that I am unapologetic about hiring this man. Kwame Raoul has a really long record on criminal justice reforms and has hired ex-felons in the past, has hired people who've run into problems with the criminal justice system, because he says, you know, people deserve a second chance. And he's hoping that because Bruce Rauner has also pushed this idea of allowing people to rehabilitate themselves and reenter the system, that this won't be a big campaign issue for him when he faces Erica Harold, who is the governor's chosen candidate.
Yeah, and to Monique's point, I mean, about hiring ex-felons, I believe Raoul has been involved in, for anybody who did taxes this week, you may have noticed on your Illinois forms that there is a tax credit option for hiring an ex-felon. So this is something that, you know, he said, I think in Monique's story, that, you know, he supports, if he supports this law to, you know, encourage everyday Illinoisans to hire ex-felons to work in their companies, he should do the same thing himself.
And Brian, let's stay on the court beat, I guess, when it comes to politicians. Aaron Schock, former congressman from the Peoria area, he's still battling it out in courts these days with the federal government. And what's the latest on his situation?
Yeah, his lawyers were before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the U.S., the federal appellate court in Chicago. And they're basically arguing that prosecutors are being overzealous in their prosecution here, and that, you know, the quote I saw is that they want him, the prosecutors want to be the first to imprison a former member of Congress over ambiguity in House rules. Now, remember, Schock is charged with, among other things, claiming, what, $138,000 for, quote, fraudulent claims for mileage reimbursements. But the lawyers basically say that, you know, the House rules were in kind of a gray area here, and that there's a separation of powers, and that the prosecutors, this is something that the House, you know, should be handling as an ethical matter, not a prosecution from the executive branch. The Justice Department, which is, you know, through the U.S. Attorney, is leading this prosecution, pushes back on that, saying that if it's up to Congress, then it's, you know, these rules become a suggestion. You can't just, you know, sort of write rules that get you out of complying with the law and committing fraud. So it's going to be interesting to see how that case progresses, if it progresses, right? We've been waiting for several years now for Schock's trial to begin. It's supposed to happen in the courthouses here in central Illinois. He had his first appearance in Springfield, it's almost a year and a half ago now, I think, and just his lawyers are really pushing every question they possibly can.
Well, an historic event occurred in Illinois politics this week. The first female and first African-American to be the Cook County Democratic Party chair was named, and that's the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. And I'll throw this open to whoever wants to talk about it, but what is the significance of this? Is there significance to that position?
I mean, I think there's significance to it. It's a job with a lot of history, although, as Charlie can tell us in a moment, it maybe doesn't quite have the history or the authority that it once did. But this is the post that Richard J. Daley, the first Mayor Daley of Chicago, held this job for 22 years, longer, actually, than he was mayor, and, you know, was able to control not just Democratic politics in Cook County, which, you know, is maybe all politics in Cook County, or most politics in Cook County at the time, but also, you know, helped elect presidents and was really a kingmaker at that time. So Preckwinkle, there wasn't a fight. Another commentator I saw pointed out how, you know, back in the day, people would hurl insults and accuse each other of betraying the party. But she was, as I think ABC in Chicago put it, this was more of a coronation than an election. She was ultimately unopposed. But I'll leave it to Charlie. I mean, this is not, you know, the job that it once was.
No, and the big difference is back when Richard J. Daley was the county chairman, the party controlled literally tens of thousands of jobs, and that enabled them to put together an army of foot soldiers to go out and work precincts, and it gave them incredible influence that with the numerous court rulings and the other, what would you say, changes in our ethical behavior that's kind of done away with patronage, the job isn't nearly as important as it was back then. It's an important position, but it doesn't have the same influence back when Richard J. Daley could dictate to the statewide Democratic Party who the candidates were going to be. And in fact, when Dan Walker, what would have been back in 1972, had his rebellious, if you will, campaign for governor as an independent, he ran against Richard J. Daley and the Daley machine. And he beat Paul Simon by claiming that Paul Simon was a tool of Richard J. Daley, which was not true, but that's history.
And Monique, this was a, you know, we've heard about the history of it, but looking at it strictly from a political point of view from Tony Preckwinkle, this is somebody who was in, a lot of people felt maybe some jeopardy about losing the board presidency. And now she's the Democratic Party chair. Does that help her strengthen her, you know, political grip on that position as well?
It really does demonstrate her ability to weather a political storm. A few months ago, there were questions about her political future after she had backed a pretty controversial soda pop tax. That was initially challenged in court. It went away. But there were questions about her leadership abilities at that time. And this comes at a particularly interesting time for Democrats across the country, but also in Cook County, where there's a push to move in a more progressive direction. And she acknowledged that this week, when she was named to this post, that it's something that the party has to do to try to appeal to younger voters, voters involved in Black Lives Matter, and voters involved in this anti-gun push. And she says we need to do a better job of reaching out and shoring up the younger members of our base.
And if I may jump in, as Brian and Charlie said earlier, this isn't a job that how it used to be. It's very different. It's going to be difficult for Preckwinkle to bring those factions from the party together to work together. And they've said in the past, like Monique just said earlier, that she wants to make this to be more inclusive, to reach out to the younger folks out there.
Well, the legislature was in session this week, and we haven't really talked about much of the action that took place there. But one piece of legislation getting a lot of attention, the Illinois House passing, and I believe without anybody opposing it on the floor, what's known as the Truth in Hiring Act. And Daisy, why don't you fill us in on what this is about? What's the controversy this is trying to solve here?
Yeah, so basically this proposal makes it to bring all, quote-unquote, offshore employees of the governor's office back into the governor's budget. So currently, the governor can have employees working for him and get their salary from other budgets, from other agencies. So the idea is to bring those back to his budget, so that to make it look
more accurate,
right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this goes all the way back. And if Charlie can jump in, from maybe 40 years ago.
Yeah, it goes back at least to Dan Walker's time again. And I don't know if Richard Ogilvie did it or not. I can't recall. But I know Dan Walker did. And governors of both parties have done it. And it's a way to disguise the cost of the office. They can say, oh, look, my office is only 80% as costly as my predecessor. Well, the way you do that is you take some of your people and you pay them from other payrolls. And Governor Rauner got in trouble because he put some of his people on payrolls of agencies that back in the day were off limits to that kind of nonsense because they provided services to real people. So back in the day, you loaded up ghost payrollers at places like transportation or the predecessor of the Commerce and Economic Opportunity, ones where they didn't have direct impact on people's lives and didn't affect the care that some of our more marginal citizens needed. So you didn't have ghost payrollers in mental health, for example.
Time now for our notes from the field. And Monique, let's start with you.
Well, looking ahead a little bit, next week the Democratic State Central Committee will meet, where members are expected to elect House Speaker Michael Madigan as chair of the Illinois Democratic Party again. This is, of course, after questions and calls for his resignation from some within his own party after a series of controversies involving sexual harassment allegations at his political campaigns.
All right, Charlie?
Well, for years, ever since the advent of the internet, local merchants have complained about the unfair advantage online retailers have in pricing, in that the guy down on Main Street who's running a department store has to charge sales tax. The online shipper does not. And so there's been talk about doing something to kind of even the playing field. And this week, the Senate passed legislation fairly solidly, 39-10, that would require out-of-state retailers doing business with Illinoisans to collect a use tax if their gross receipts from Illinoisans exceed $100,000, or they have more than 200 separate transactions with customers in the state.
All right, Daisy?
Yeah, so earlier this week, DCFS finally released reports after a 9-month delay on child abuse cases. For 35 years, the agency has been releasing these on a monthly basis. They stopped last year. The agency claims they have been experiencing some technical difficulties with the reporting tools. Advocates say they aren't sure that's actually the case. After reviewing some of that data, they say that they saw an increase in child re-abuse cases that maybe the agency has been trying to hide. Who knows what's actually going on in there.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Monique Garcia with the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org, and production assistance provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.